Support for Radio Boston comes from Hadestown at the Box Center Wang Theater, Broadway's Tony and Grammy-winning Best Musical, an epic celebration of music, togetherness, and hope, raves Forbes. Playing April 23rd through April 28th. Buy your tickets today at boxcenter.org.
This is Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. In just the past hour, President Donald Trump delivered some prepared remarks in a joint press conference with the Prime Minister of Spain. Trump said he's sending, quote, America's hearts and prayers to the people of Puerto Rico and the U.S. Virgin Islands, end quote. The president then went on to say that Puerto Rican Governor Ricardo Rossello offered his compliments to the Trump administration.
As Governor Rossello just told me this morning, the entire federal workforce is doing great work in Puerto Rico, and I appreciated his saying it, and he's saying it to anybody that will listen. Our team has been incredible after having gone through Texas and then Florida with other stops along the way. And he further went on, he said, and through the Trump administration's leadership, the relationship between FEMA and my team is very, very strong.
That's President Trump a little earlier today. Now, his tone is markedly different from that of yesterday, when in between a barrage of tweets about the NFL, the president tweeted this about Puerto Rico. Quote, Puerto Rico, which was already suffering from broken infrastructure and massive debt, is in deep trouble. Much of the island was destroyed with billions of dollars owed to Wall Street and the banks, which sadly must be dealt with. He then added, cryptically, food, water, and medical care are top priorities and doing well, hashtag FEMA. So hard to know exactly what the president meant by those tweets, an expression of compassion for the devastated island, or a cold, hard capitalist take on disaster relief. Either way, it put Puerto Rican Governor Ricardo Rossello in the odd position of having to justify the fiscal management of his government while standing amid the apocalyptic ruin of the island.
Let me tell you something. Puerto Rico had already started doing their part. I was embarking on a very aggressive fiscal agenda. We had reduced, cut over $1.5 billion in our budget. We started reducing agencies, making the changes we had to ensue. But now this is a game changer. This is a completely different set of circumstances, and this needs to be taken into consideration. Otherwise, there will be a humanitarian crisis. Right. There will be massive exodus to the United States. So I call upon Congress to take action, to make their wishes, their solidarity at this moment be something tangible, that it's a bill that actually answers to our needs right now.
That's Rossello on CNN this morning. So let's get some reaction from members of the local Puerto Rican community. First from Otoniel Figueroa, co-founder of the Alliance for Puerto Rico, a Boston-based community organization. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Also with us is Greg Molina, Director of Communications at the Puerto Rican Festival of Massachusetts. Greg, welcome to you.
Thank you, Meghna, for having us.
So first of all, Otoniel, let me just turn to you. What do you make of how the Trump administration has responded, or what we know of how they've responded so far to the disaster in Puerto Rico?
We think that the response from the president is an embarrassment. You know, all the news that we receive from Puerto Rico is that this is a situation with apocalyptic proportion. Everything is a threat. There's a public health threat. Water in any point it will be contaminated. The supplies that we've been getting are stuck in warehouses in San Juan. FEMA is only working through one distribution center in the eastern point of the island. There are four ports in the south and in the west that the FEMA is not using, that the Coast Guard opened during the weekend, and we're telling President Trump and the elected officials that FEMA should be using that to be able to get the supply to the rest of the island. People are in danger. People will die. This is a matter of days, hours, and the response hasn't been enough.
So, Greg, though, we heard the president just a little earlier say that he said that Governor Rossello was saying that there was good coordination between what's going on in Puerto Rico and FEMA.
I think Trump is, quite frankly, speaking on both sides of his mouth. I think he's really, really doesn't know the gravity of the situation. You're talking about 3.5 million Americans that, quite frankly, right now are in a catastrophic situation. He's correct, absolutely correct. You know, we are trying the best we can in the mainland, trying to get first response supplies to these people. But unfortunately, it really is a national attention that it needs. We need some kind of carriers out there. We need more helicopters. FEMA's doing the best they can, working with the local government, working with MEMA from Massachusetts, and also working with the local community. You got the people, citizens, trying to clear roads so they can get them supplies.
Yeah. So, Greg, I mean, speaking of state-level efforts, you've been in touch with Governor Charlie Baker's office. I mean, what does state coordination look like right now, and what more could be done?
Well, right now what we're trying to do is, you know, to use the analogy of a traffic jam. Right now Puerto Rico has a huge traffic jam in terms of the goods that they've already received. There are some supplies in warehouses. There are some supplies on the tarmac at Luis Muñoz Marín Airport. There's only 10 flights that are allowed to come into Puerto Rico right now.
Right.
They have to come in during the daytime because the lights on the runway are off after 6 p.m. So, you know, it's a situation that really, you know, they're doing the best they can. The government, local government, doesn't want to create a larger traffic jam. What we want to do is make sure that once FEMA, the federal government, and everybody in Puerto Rico gets the infrastructure to get the supplies to the people, that we already will mobilize and organize and find a way to collect and transport the goods to Puerto Rico.
And Otoniel, I mean, give us a better sense as to what conditions are like on the ground now. Greg was just talking about how flights can only come in during the day. And, you know, what about other basic necessities, food, water, fuel?
We have enough problems in shelters where people are running out of food, out of water. People are going to gas stations to get $20 worth of gas, and they starting at 5 a.m. and they ended up at 3 p.m. getting out of the gas station. At 5 a.m. they get there, and there's hundreds of people. This is a friend of mine that was able to talk to me about this. What we need to understand is one thing is the relief effort now for Puerto Rico long term, if we don't get a massive injection of money, a financial stimulus package from the federal government, Puerto Rico will not be able to survive. We're talking about a type of Marshall Plan like Europe post-war received, because after 10 years in economic depression, the FEMA funds will not be enough. Sending relief is not going to be enough. This is deep. This is a catastrophic situation, and the response has been slow. Mm. Regardless of what other people say, if this will happen in Texas, if this will be happening in Florida, if this will be happening in Chicago, the response will be triple differently than we're receiving now. So we're 3.4 American citizens in Puerto Rico that right now they feel that they are worthless, that they're like trash because they're not receiving the emergency help that they should be getting.
So Greg, I'm still struck by how telling it is that the airport can't even stay open at nighttime because of power reasons. I mean, for example, how is this affecting individual Puerto Ricans? I've heard that the CDC is telling people to boil water. Do they have the fuel or means to do that?
You know, I got to laugh. I'm sorry, because obviously, you know, there are people drinking swimming pool water. Okay, mm-hmm. That's how bad the situation is. Swimming pool water. Right now, what Puerto Rico needs more than anything else, and Mr. Figueroa is absolutely correct, this is not going to fix itself in 2-3 years. This is going to be 5 or 10 years before Puerto Rico is a shadow of what it used to be. Really, what they need now is monetary donations, okay? People have to do their research, make sure it's a credible organization, because right now what's happening, I just got off the phone with somebody in Yuma, and they were saying that there's no money in ATM machines. The ones that are working, there's no money. So they end up, and when they do find an ATM that has money, they take out $250 instead of $20 that they need for the day, and then the ATM runs out of money. So this literally can be USA's Katrina. The only issue here is it's an island.
Mm-hmm.
It's in Texas and Florida. You can put a lot of 18-wheelers on the road and bring them the needs and the supplies that they need.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, you can't do that in this situation.
Yeah. So I want to ask both of you one last question here, because, I mean, obviously, clearly, there is extreme acute need right now, when it comes to basic humanitarian needs for, as you said, the millions of Puerto Ricans on the island. But I'm also thinking about what Governor Rossello said in the clip we played at the top of this conversation, that the long-term effort it's going to take to rebuild the island. If it doesn't happen, that he said we could be seeing a mass exodus of Puerto Ricans to the mainland. Now because of the economic situation, that the economic struggle that the island has already been in for a decade or so, there has been a lot of younger people moving to the mainland. If that just gets exacerbated by years-long recovery effort, how is Puerto Rico in the long run going to get fully back on its feet?
I think that one of the main things when we say that Puerto Rico needs a type of a Marshall Plan, we need the federal government to cancel our public debt. There's no way people, my friends and family and the children that I know there that want to stay in that island, that want to stay in the country and help rebuild, are going to be able to stay if our resources end up in banks in Wall Street. That has to stop. And the federal government has the power to make it stop. That's the only way we're going to be able to rebuild our island.
That debt is estimated at something like $70 billion. I mean, Greg Molina, your thought about that?
Yeah, I've heard $78 billion. He's absolutely correct. But that's just one step. You know, the forgiveness of the debt is one thing. I think the whole Jones Act has to be renegotiated. I mean, the tariffs that Puerto Rico pays for goods and services is just astronomical. It's just ridiculous. That island continues to survive with these systems in place as it is right now.
Well, Greg Molina, Director of Communications at the Puerto Rican Festival of Massachusetts, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you very much for having us.
And Odaniel Figueroa, co-founder of the Alliance for Puerto Rico, thank you so much.
Thank you for helping us put the Puerto Rico issue out front. Thank you.
All right. Well, let's turn now to some breaking news this afternoon about health care. Senate Republicans have announced they will not hold a vote on the Graham-Cassidy health care bill. That's the latest attempt by Senate Republicans to repeal and replace Obamacare. Here's one of the bill's sponsors, Senator Bill Cassidy, speaking just a moment ago.
Through events that are under our control and not under our control, we don't have the votes. We've made the decision since we don't have the votes, we will postpone that vote. Okay? Am I disappointed? Absolutely.
Well, today's announcement comes less than 24 hours after Maine Senator Republican Susan Collins said yesterday that she opposes the bill. She said, quote, in a statement, sweeping reforms to our health care system and to Medicaid can't be done well in a compressed time frame. And she joined Arizona Senator John McCain and Kentucky's Rand Paul, who had also said they'd vote no. Now, here's Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer, the Democrat, a few minutes ago. He says there remains a giant chasm between the two parties.
Every Democratic plan wants to expand health care, help people, more people get better health care. Every Republican plan wants to cut back on health care. That's the difference between the parties that I hope will change now that this bill has been defeated.
Now, as a reminder, Republicans had until the end of this month to pass the bill through the Senate while being protected from a Democratic filibuster. Next month, Republicans would need Democratic votes in order to pass any kind of repeal bill. Pretty much impossible, given unified Democratic opposition to GOP repeal pushes. But as we heard yesterday from a longtime healthcare reporter, Senate Republicans could add new parliamentary language to avoid a Democratic filibuster. So we'll see if the healthcare story is over yet. We'll be back. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is Radio Boston.